Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. And now, a big debate in the world of education about how best to teach non-English-speaking students in Massachusetts schools. 15 years ago, Massachusetts voters replaced bilingual education with English only, or something called sheltered English immersion. The idea was to offer kids the best path to succeed in a culture where English is the dominant language. But now Beacon Hill lawmakers are pushing a bill that would allow school districts more flexibility to bring back bilingual education. But there's a lot of debate about the merits of the plan and about whether sheltered English immersion works. Joining us now with two views on this are Rosalie Porter. She's a former bilingual education teacher and a former head of the bilingual department for Newton Public Schools. She spearheaded the 2002 English-only ballot initiative and says the current system is working. And Rosalie Porter joins us from New England Public Radio in Springfield. Good to have you, Rosalie Porter. Thank you for being with us.
Good to be here, Anthony. Thank you.
Also with us is Miren Uriarte. She's a professor emeritus at UMass Boston and has researched this issue for years. She's a member of the Boston Public School Committee and favors giving schools more leeway on this issue. And Miren Uriarte, welcome to you. It's good to have you.
Thank you.
So let me start with you, Rosalie Porter, if I could. Why do you think the state shouldn't change the current law?
Because the elements are in the present law. When we passed this English immersion law, we allowed parents to ask for a bilingual program if they wanted it. But the main thrust of this law was to give children access to the English language as quickly and effectively as possible. As a former teacher, I believe in it.
Yeah. And you have a bit of a personal story to tell about learning English in the classroom. So your view is very much shaped by your own experience. Can you tell us, give us a little bit of your background and your personal views about this?
Well, briefly, I arrived in the U.S. as a six-year-old child in a family where no one knew a word of English. I sat in a classroom in Newark, New Jersey. Nobody helped me at all. And when I grew up and heard about bilingual education, I thought, this is what I want to do.
Yeah, right.
And I began my career as a teacher, and then I became a researcher and all that stuff.
And before I go over to...
I have a lot of concerns about the idea that English immersion is not effective because it has been proven effective in California, Arizona, and I trust in Massachusetts as well.
So tell us what exactly we mean. I mean, let's define the term sheltered English immersion. I mean, we all understand the idea of English only as a concept, but how is this actually carried out? What does sheltered English immersion actually consist of?
Structured English immersion requires teachers trained in how to teach a language from the very first day of school to teach children how to use the language in social and academic situations, teach them how to do math in English, how to do science in English. And believe me, we have developed very good strategies over the past 30 years. We really know how to do it well. And it's about inclusion. It's about getting these kids in a year or two into a mainstream classroom where they can work with their English teaching
All right.
classmates.
So, Rosalie,
that's
what it's about. Rosalie Porter, I want to come over to you and get a different point of view. You have concerns about English immersion. I'm sorry, Miren Uriarte, I want to come over to you and get your concerns about English-only immersion. Why isn't it working?
Well, I think that the issue here is not... the state has had now 15 years to implement and try different approaches to SEI. And in fact, Massachusetts students are among, the ELLs are among the most accomplished, across the nation. This is not only because of SEI, but because Massachusetts has very good schools in general. I mean, we know they're number one in the United States, as has been found. But so that it is hard at this point to really, sort of isolate the effect of SEI. The issue here is not whether you know, we, you know, it's an up and down on SEI. It's about the populations of students that we have, the diversity of these students, and the diversity of needs, and the need and the capacity at this point of the districts to really respond to those needs. We have students coming without any formal schooling at all. We have students coming that are very strong in their first language and everything in between, so that the districts have to be able to respond to that reality. And the current system does not allow us to do it. It gives us one recipe for everybody. And I think, you know, I think Dr. Porter is correct. Parents can, you know, submit, and can, you know, if there are 20 parents in a district, in a grade, they can request a specific exemption. But those things are very hard for immigrant parents to do. And number two, it is almost impossible for a district to respond for every 20, you know, group of 20 students, so that it becomes a non-choice. So, you see what I mean? It becomes a non-choice. So right. What we're talking about here is not so much about the negative points of SEI, but about the need to really expand the tools, the capacities of the different districts to respond to the students in front of them.
So, Professor Uriarte, can you give me a sense of what the proposals on Beacon Hill would do that? I mean, is this a question of reinstating bilingual education, or giving individual school districts new flexibility to do whatever they see fit? I mean, how do you describe
what I see is the latter. It's they would still have to, you know, there would be some requirement for exemption. Yeah, I mean, this is not undoing the law altogether, but it will require some exemptions, but it will allow for much more flexibility and much more innovation at this point than is allowed by current law.
Right. Now, Rosalie Porter, I want to come over to you and just throw some facts at you, because the proponents of changing this law will point to facts like these. English language learners have the highest dropout rates and lowest graduation rates of all subgroups tracked by the state. And folks will say,
doesn't that suggest this is unusual?
Okay, we'll explain that, because some folks might look at that and say, this is evidence for the need for change.
I'm very disappointed, because it is not unusual for ELL children to have a high dropout rate. Clearly, the state has not done enough to implement the English immersion programs as they should. The results in California and Arizona have been outstanding over the same period of time, reducing dropout rates, improving the students' ability to take state tests in English, et cetera, et cetera. What Professor Maria Uriarte just said is very true. We have a very diverse population from perhaps 50 or 60 different language backgrounds. You cannot give all these children native language instruction, but we do know how to teach them English for academic purposes. I don't know that this state has produced research evidence that English immersion programs are not working here. Maybe they're not doing enough, but I do not see Massachusetts being a depressing state for English language learners.
I mean, I think this is one of the problems and one of the challenges in this debate. From the research that I've done and the help I've gotten from my producer on this segment, it looks like the state hasn't evaluated, done a sort of broad statewide evaluation of whether the current system is working. Is that fair?
That's a big problem.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you for
making
that point, Anthony. That is a huge problem, and it should have been done during the years that we had bilingual programs. It wasn't done for 30 years.
Yeah.
15 years of this new program, new efforts, other states report achievement. This state has not done enough.
So, Mira Nuriarte, what do you have to say about that? You've looked into this a little bit, right?
Yes.
You've done research on this. What have you found?
I think it's correct that we don't have a consistent evaluation at the state level. But there have been studies in Boston, there have been studies in Worcester and Springfield, these are the larger you know, sites for presence of English language learners. So we do have an idea of what happened. I was part of the research team that looked at Boston. And for example, we saw how the shift from transitional bilingual education to SEI raised, you know, in 3 years, there was a dramatic rise in the number of dropouts. I don't agree with Dr. Porter that it's a natural phenomenon for English language learners to drop out. I think it's natural to expect that their MCAS scores are going to be lower, but there should be, you know, there are ways, and it's not a given that students will drop out in the numbers, in the very high numbers in which they do. I think, you know, graduation rate for English language learners in Massachusetts in the 60 percentile, which is dramatically low. But what I wanted to point out is that in the time since the implementation of SEI in 2003, there have been several the federal government has had to intervene in Boston, in Worcester, and now at the state level in terms of the training of teachers. In Boston, for example, we're now, since 2009, we're under the oversight of both the Department of Education and the Office for Civil Rights.
But Professor Uriarte, let me jump in on that, because this is a question I wanted to ask you. Does that mean, is the problem the law, or is it the implementation? In other words, do teachers need to be more properly trained to sort of execute what this law requires?
I think that's going to be the case under any circumstances. And what happened with this law initially is that the assumption was that the switch could be made very easily. That if you can teach a student that speaks English, you can also teach a student that does not. And that's just not the case. It requires a lot of professional development of teachers. And the state did not take that on until very, very late. It is now under federal oversight also for the training of teachers. Mm. And it's remedying the situation of teacher, the professional development of teachers. But that has happened probably in the last 4 or 5 years. So yes, it is a problem of implementation. But at this point, I think that what those people on the ground and, people that are parents, what we want is the capacity, what people want is the capacity to really innovate and try to see. What I'm hoping is that we don't, and I'm sure Dr. Porter will agree with me, no one wants to go back to the old,
old way. Let me get Rosalie.
I think we need something now with that. Let me just make one more point. There is far more experience today in Massachusetts in working with immigrant students than there was in 2001. And I think that's going to be a major, it allows for much more creativity and much more innovation if we give teachers and districts and principals the capacity to do so. I have faith that it will be a good way.
All right, I'm going to jump in here because I want to give Rosalie Porter a chance to respond to that. So, Rosalie, for what I'm taking away from what Miran Uriarte is saying is, why not allow school districts to choose the type of program that works for their student populations? Give them that ability to innovate and adapt a program that works for them.
Innovation, creativity, all wonderful, provided they meet the basic concern of helping these students into the mainstream. That is the key. And I was happy to hear Dr. Uriarte say that they are doing more teacher training. And I know that Boston has been under federal complaint about they are not having done enough. Let's face it. There was a Supreme Court decision in the Flores versus Arizona case, and one of my favorite justices wrote an opinion, Justice Breyer, in which he said, Spanish-speaking children have the right to be taught the common language of this country so they can succeed in school. He also said, English immersion has proven to be the most effective model. He recognized me by name, which was wonderful. But, I will sit still and applaud any innovation, any creativity in any school district in this state that helps children acquire the English language, fit into regular classrooms, be included, and feel good about what they're doing in school. I've seen this happen in Arizona big time. I've seen it happen in California.
Right.
I believe much better things are happening today for limited English children than were happening 30 or 40 years ago.
Well, so let me
and
put
I
that.
And I hope it will continue to
And you hope
improve.
It will continue. So, Mirin Uriarte, let me ask you this. Would this law that's being considered by the legislature essentially take Massachusetts back to where it was before the voter-approved law and, respond to Rosalie Porter's concern that the progress has been made since then?
I'm hopeful that it won't, you know what I mean? But I think that it will, you know, the proof is in the pudding and it will be in the implementation of the new law, just as the problems of SEI were in the implementation, so that we need to be vigilant. And I, you know, again, I think that we can all agree that we need to find, we have a very much more complex population of immigrant students right now that require a variety of interventions, not just one type. And I think what we can applaud about this new effort is that it will give districts the capacity to really respond to the individual, you know, to the needs of the different groups of students. And I think that's a good thing.
Mm. And Rosalie Porter, is that your biggest concern, what I sort of expressed in that question to Mirin, and that is that this law would take Massachusetts back to where it was before the voter-approved law in 2002?
I hope. I sincerely and devoutly hope that is not the case. But let me say this. Where school districts, and I'm talking about New York City, where I've been involved in a lawsuit there, where school districts dictate and base some of their decisions on expanding staff, hiring more teachers, doing this and that, and their first concern is not the students' achievement, bad things happen. I know that our population of English learners is very diverse. We have always had a diverse population. We've had mostly children of poverty, families that move frequently from one town to another. The problems of educating these children are large
and they're complex. And this is a large and complex debate, and I'm afraid we're out of time. So I'm going to thank you both. Rosalie Porter, spearhead of the 2002 ballot initiative, which mandated English immersion. And she is board chair of the organization Pro English, which advocates for English immersion programs. Rosalie Porter, thank you for joining us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me.
And Mirin Uriarte, professor emeritus at UMass Boston, member of the Boston Public School Committee. Thank you as well, Professor Uriarte. Good to have you.
Thank you very much.
Stay with us, listeners. Coming up, George Wein, founder of the Newport Jazz Festival, recalls the summer of 1955 when Miles Davis stole the show. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.